Hello, and welcome to episode number 3 of Light the Eye, presented by the U of I Credit Union. I'm Scott Beatty.
And I'm Robert Rosenthal.
Don't say anything more. We have to keep this professional. If you've been with us for the first couple of episodes, thank you so much. We're going to do something a little bit different than the expected pattern. I say expected because we've only had 2 episodes, so we can hardly say we have a pattern. But we've talked Illini sports and whatnot for the last couple of episodes. Today, we're talking about ourselves. How did we get here? What are our goals with this podcast? So we're going to do that a little bit. If you're not so much interested in learning about our stories and who we are, just wait for the next episode. But if you want to learn a little bit more about us, then stick around. I'm a little nervous, though, because, Robert, we all know you're shy about sharing about yourself, especially when it comes to your feelings or anything about your life.
Just got to give me the heads up, like my wife does at parties. She'll say, tell that story, keep it to 3 minutes, because she knows it's 14 if I don't. So just, you know, put the governor on and we're good.
I shall govern.
Yes, thank you.
Without further ado, it's episode number 3, Light the Eye. So I got a few questions and comments from folks. Hey, how's the new podcast going? Have you gotten any good feedback? And like any good podcast host would say, yes, we're getting great feedback. Thank you, actually, to everybody who's given us feedback.
Absolutely.
The liking, the subscribing, the comments, we really appreciate it. But I got to say, last episode we talked about how great it is here in the Armory, and our friends at CITL, Center for Innovation, Teaching, and Learning here at the University of Illinois. But on my way here today, coming right up 4th Street, got a snowball thrown at the old car.
Really? By a student or like a kid?
Yeah, I would say some hooligans that may or may not have been in front of a house with some letters on it, some Greek letters on it.
Right.
So we got to have a discussion with the neighborhood association, because these kids, you know, I don't know exactly where you were housed on campus, but maybe you
Champagne all 5 years, and I support the throwing of snowballs from campus houses. I'm not old enough that I'm beyond the snowball toward the windshield, having done that as a youth.
Yeah,
I still support 19-year-old kids being 19-year-old kids.
I was so laser-focused on making the turn and finding a parking spot that I just didn't have the bandwidth to roll down the window and
hey, you and kids, say, shake a fist.
Yeah, and just, you know, be like, ah-ha, you kids, that's great.
Yep.
But anyway, yes. I got to look. So that's how we're going.
It's part of being on the campus and being in the campus community. You're going to deal with 19-year-olds being 19. I kind of like it.
So we thought that this episode we would just to help folks get to know us.
Yep.
What we're trying to do. Some people have known you for a long time, having followed you on your website. Some folks have heard me on the radio or whatnot. Some people are here for the first time. So we thought we'd share a little bit.
Sure. Sure. I think I'll interview you and then you interview me, right?
I don't know how this works.
Yes, I'll interview you first.
I'm a little bit hesitant to say, you know, because I'm very aware of like navel gazing 100%. And talking about yourself can just be sort of self-serving.
Yes, yes. This is probably a lot easier for me because I write this way on Illini Board. Like I'm just sharing my personal story and how it ties in with the game and that type of thing. So this is probably a little easier for me than you.
Yeah.
So that's why let's put you on the hot seat first. And I'll guide you down the path, and then you can try to keep me from talking for an hour.
Yeah, but I mean, I've been interviewed before,
sure.
More about, you know, Illini sports or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But my whole mindset in my career has been, you know, I'm here to set up everybody else.
Yes.
Or just tell you what's going on if you're doing play-by-play. It's not a real show about me.
Yes. Well, let's start with this. Okay. Why did you pick Illinois? Like, why did you come here to school I mean, you could talk about where you grew up and this and that, but what led the decision of that's where I'm going to college?
This was the best place that had the mix of things I was considering. So I actually started in engineering, as a chemical engineer, but I was also in music. And I knew that I could start in engineering and potentially have a pretty fairly easy switch into a music major. I had auditioned in the School of Music and been accepted there as well. So that's how that came about. Plus, I was an in-state kid. There were other schools I looked at, but it all just made the most sense, both practically and for what I wanted to do, perhaps, with my life. Here I am on a sports podcast.
Sure, sure. Was it 1 year in chemical engineering?
Yeah, one semester. 1 year. Yeah.
1 year, one full year.
Yeah.
So what, when, like, what was the moment of deciding, like, you know what, you know, when did you call your mom and say, like, hey, I think I'm going to switch to music?
It was late first semester. And it wasn't because I didn't like what I was doing engineering-wise. It was just I felt the pull to go back to music. I say go back. I was heavily into music in high school. And it just it came out that that's the direction I went.
Yep.
And I almost went into journalism in college. Not here at the U of I, but I was exploring that as I was applying and looking at journalism schools and ultimately settled not in it. But here I am.
Yep. Yep. What was the, at what point did you like walk through like, okay, I graduated with a music degree, wanted to do that. And then, you know, walk me through all the career shifts.
So after college, I taught music for a few years up in the suburbs in Naperville. And then, had a calling into campus ministry. So I worked in that space here at the U of I. This was 20 years ago that I started in that. And while I was doing that, my wife, she is, I think we, are we doing pictures?
Yes, yeah, yes.
Let's for those of you who are following, this is my wife. She's a faculty at Parkland College, which is the two-year school here in Champaign County. And she teaches in the sciences, chemistry, and forensic science, and she's a great professor there. She said, oh, hey, Parkland College is looking, they had the flyer up. They're looking for some volunteer broadcasters, the local radio station that they operate. I was frustrated with her that she hadn't told me sooner that she had seen that flyer. Went over there, said, I'm just a guy here in the community. I don't go to school here. Any, you know, I'm, and would you still take me? They did. They said, yeah, absolutely. This Friday, there's a high school game. You're on.
And that was your first ever play-by-play was that Friday night?
Yeah.
Really?
I mean, maybe I might be forgetting a little bit of the sequence. It was not long between I'm interested and you're on. And that's what started the whole thing of getting into sports casting.
So when you got the taste of that, you know, you so engineering, music, you know, music educator, ministry to this, once you got a taste of broadcasting, was that the, you know, because we're going to get to that in my story. Once I started doing this, it was like,
oh, let's make it all about you. Why don't we?
Yes, yes. So is it similar for you? Did you have this moment of like, yeah, this is, doing this play-by-play is what I've wanted to do?
Yeah, it was pretty, I'm in a sweet spot here.
Yes.
And it wasn't because I wasn't with other things. It wasn't like going through begrudgingly dreading my days or anything. I was loving all the things I had done.
Sure.
But it just felt like, yeah, this is something I'm so look forward to doing, and still the case.
So then there was a pivot from, you know, to doing that full time. So let's walk through that.
Yeah. So long story short, I started doing broadcasting at Parkland College. I actually did enroll and became a, what do you call it, non-traditional student, or, you know, wasn't pursuing a degree because I already had one, but doing some classwork and some broadcasting.
Sure.
And I ended up broadcasting for them. I parlayed that into an internship with a professional baseball team in Rockford, Illinois, and then parlayed that into full-time seasonal job with a minor league baseball team in South Dakota. At the same time, here in Champaign, I would work in the off seasons. I landed a part-time job at WDWS, which is the flagship for U of I. I'd already met Brian Barnhart. He was a big help to me. He's the voice of the Illini, mm-hmm. calling football and basketball. And I started working there part-time. Eventually, long story short, doing seasonal baseball, needed to change out of that rhythm, family, what have you.
Mm-hmm.
And got a full-time job at WDWS. And that also started to grow my sportscasting opportunities with University of Illinois.
Yep.
A little bit after that, got a became the host of a sports talk show on WDWS. Recently announced I'm stepping away from that after 8 years. I'm stepping back from that. Allows more time for freelance broadcasting, this podcast, some other ventures. So here we are.
When did you become the baseball play-by-play guy? What year were, what year did you start doing the baseball?
For Illinois?
For Illini baseball play-by-play.
Longtime fans will remember Dave Lone. He was the voice of Illinois volleyball, Illinois women's basketball, and Illinois baseball. Well, women's basketball overlaps with the start of baseball season, and the broadcast schedule from baseball expanded into the full season somewhere around 2013 or 14. I don't remember exactly.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, I think it was about 2015. That doesn't matter, though. But they needed somebody to cover the early series for Illinois baseball while women's basketball was still going on, because it was just too much for one broadcaster to be traveling with baseball and then doing women's basketball and all that, and trying to figure out when are the conflicts and who can cover what. So they just said, you know, you're the women's basketball announcer until that season's over. So we will have somebody else cover the early part of the baseball season. So I would do that, and I started that in 2017.
Mm-hmm.
Dave Lone retired in 2019, and I was offered the full season job starting in 2020. So I did the early season games for Illinois baseball in 2020, and that turned out to be the full season.
Because?
Of COVID.
Yes, yes.
So we all know that story. I was literally driving from Champaign to Indianapolis to go cover the Big Ten basketball tournament when I got a phone call.
Mm-hmm.
Said, turn around.
Yep.
There's no more tournament, but we need not go down that. Anyway, so that was my first full season, but obviously a full season didn't really happen until 2021. I'd also, though, in 2016, started doing a package of Illinois softball games, including their postseason runs. So that was really cool.
Yeah.
And I would fill in here and there on basketball when Brian Barnhart needed to fill in.
Mm-hmm. And you filled in this year on football for the Indiana game.
Yeah.
You got to call.
Yes, the once
63-10.
Once in a lifetime opportunity for me to call a college football game for Illinois, because Brian's daughter got married on a football Saturday. I know that sounds like sacrilege to somebody like you,
mm-hmm.
but there are other people out there that
actually don't get married in the fall,
and yeah, don't orbit their world around
yes
a college football team.
Yes,
strange, but I can explain more about that someday if you want.
We can cover that in the second half of this.
Yeah. So there is people that don't care about football.
Wait, what?
So, yeah, I even got to do that. And I still wouldn't trade it back. I know you might, but mm-hmm. I wouldn't trade back even calling your team's blowout loss.
Yes.
It was incredible.
Yes. I don't think you and I have talked about this. I'm curious, in that game, I'm sure you were practicing for it, and I know you were, like, doing a little... I know, like, at home you did, like, tape of a game just to practice the flow of things and this and that. How do you... You were with Kerry Davis that
yeah.
night? Yeah. How do... Like, when it's going like that, and suddenly, you know, India is not even punting, and they're not even throwing, and they're still moving the ball, and it's 56-10, and it doesn't... There's no end in sight. I mean, that's a tricky spot for a broadcaster, right? Like, you're still trying to make something interesting about the game. What was going through your head at that? Like, that had to be crazy. Of like, here's the one opportunity to call a game, and now it's 45-10, and the game's already over third quarter.
I don't know. I blacked out about then.
No. I'll bet. I would. I did.
At that point, you just go back. What I do is just go back, especially on radio, you just go back to basics.
Yeah.
You should always be on basics, but just call the game.
Yep.
Call it what it is.
Yep.
When it's radio especially, people still want to know what's going on. If they're just tuning in, what's the story of the game?
Uh-huh.
and you just say what's going on. Here's the down and distance. Here's the play. Uh-huh. Because there is still action going on.
Sure.
Television offers a little more. I don't know what the television broadcast did, but there's more space there to go into stories.
Uh-huh.
And topics that are around college football or whatever. We're talking like this, and Altmaier picks up the first down and go back to your story. But if on radio, if you don't say it, it doesn't happen.
Yep.
In a sense. Yep. So just call the game. The game is still the star. If the game's a dud, it is what it is.
Yes. There's still somebody handing off to somebody and somebody tackling somebody. And
yeah.
Yep.
That's the job.
Yes.
Play by play. So say the plays and then say the next play.
Yes.
That's the job. So that's which is what you do.
Is the career highlight so far, I'm going to guess and might be wrong, would you say the career highlight with broadcasting is the Big Ten title clinching win for baseball at Purdue? Which I was actually driving to the grocery store that night and I heard the call when Illinois clinched it outright. Now I know there was like Nebraska was still playing at the same time or something like that. So it was like it's half clinched, and if Nebraska loses or if Illinois wins or whatever, but
a win clinched a share of the title.
Got it.
On the middle game of the series. It was a Friday.
Yes. So was that, would you say that's a career highlight? I mean, where would you put career highlight? Yeah. Getting to call, you know these guys, you're traveling with the team.
Yeah.
Get to call a Big Ten title.
Yeah. I think any team broadcaster, the chance to call something special in the postseason,
mm-hmm.
there's nothing like it.
Yes.
If that's not number one, it's top two or three.
Sure.
I mean, there's definitely other, like, you know, getting to call an Illinois football game, mm-hmm. even though it was a blow, like, wow, I'm here, you know. It's kind of one of those, you know.
Yep.
I joke, you know, because my first love, again, Robert, there's people that love
sports
love sports besides football.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I love all my children.
Mm-hmm.
But
the soap opera, of course.
Yes. No, General Hospital.
Oh, okay. Yes.
But my first child, if you will, was baseball.
Mm-hmm. I get it.
So last year when Illinois football, and I grew up in Chicago area, when Illinois football played at Wrigley, I was there as the engineer / local pregame host.
Mm-hmm.
The chance to broadcast from Wrigley Field, even though it wasn't a baseball game, was still like, okay, this I'm in Wrigley Field calling a sporting event.
Yeah, I'll bet.
Yeah, but no, yeah, the Big Ten championship in 2024 for baseball was cool. The other thing was there was so much emotion in that season. The late pitching coach Mark Allen was battling cancer. The way that team rallied from a 5-11 start, mm-hmm. as I recall, to winning the Big Ten and actually the next day clinching the outright title was just a special thing. Yeah. So,
and like Connor Milton, is that his name?
Yeah.
Like a senior who hadn't played much and suddenly Hartman can't take him out of the lineup because he's hitting and he has this special senior season leading to a Big Ten title.
So many great stories.
Yes.
Out of that. There's so many great stories.
Let me ask you another question about that I've always been curious. Doing a game solo like that, like, there's no chance I could ever do it. Like, I'm somebody who talks a lot. We've covered this a lot. But, like,
there's no governor.
You don't have anybody to bounce off of, this and that. You're just telling the story of the game. Does it ever get difficult to, or are you just getting the groove and, like, there's stuff going on and I'm going to talk about it?
I'm used to it now.
Hmm. Interesting.
I first had to start doing that in pro ball 15 years ago.
Sure.
It is not intimidating, and actually, most people believe, oh, baseball is the hardest sport to call. And it is, in a way. It's the most challenging because the amount of time that the ball is in play is so small compared to the length of the game.
Yeah, yeah.
But I just find that there's so much to talk about. There's always just more. I mean, sometimes, you know, it feels like the game's not moving along or it's in a rut. But there's so much to describe. I find the challenging, I've never called a hockey game, but I would find that more challenging on radio,
mm-hmm.
because my brain would say, there's how many people are in hockey? Five, Yeah, six. Yeah, so there's 12 people out there, and they're all just moving at the same time, and I can't possibly describe this to you, and I will feel like I'm always giving the listener a disservice. Same with volleyball, although I have called volleyball on the radio, and it's great. I love it. But you just cannot possibly describe everything. Actually, football is a little bit that way. How can you possibly say what 22 people are doing at once? In radio, you say, you know, Fagan's the ball carrier, runs off right tackle, gain of three, wrapped up by Jones. That only describes a minuscule amount of what actually just happened on the field.
That's
the main headline there. Anyway, there's a lot of space to fill in baseball, but I just find there's also a lot to tell you.
What would be the ultimate thing to call? Like, is it Olympics? Is it World Series? What would be the ultimate, I got to call that game, that something?
Just a single game?
A single thing. Like, what's the dream of a broadcaster of I got to, or is it getting to a professional game? Or is it, you know, hey, it's going to be hard to top, you know, I'm an alum of Illinois and I called a Big Ten title, or is it College World Series, or is it, you know?
Well, I that's where I think there's always a tension point that I live in, and I think a lot of broadcasters do, is you want the next thing. Yeah. There's a natural desire to want the next thing. I heard a conversation about how, like, the Bears are no longer getting the sixth team on the network calling their games of whatever pairing of broadcasters. They're starting to get the more the A team, the Kevin Burkhardt and Tom Brady on Fox or whatever, because they're better, right?
Right.
And just like, imagine if you are the sixth on the depth chart for a major network. You know, you first get that job and you're like, I've made it to a network and I'm on TV, and then you start going, well, when am I going to get?
Yes.
When's Jim Nantz retiring? What am I going to get my chance there? And there's this constant tension of, I think people work in radio or TV anchors. You know, I started in this small market in Wyoming, and then I moved to this little bigger market in here. And then eventually I want to get into a top 50 market. And there's always this want to climb the ladder, but have to learn to be content with where you are. So for a lot of reasons, where I am is just great.
Love it.
Calling games for the school
that
I went to, covering the teams. It, in terms of life balance, I'm in, you know, I was spending summers away from here when I was doing minor league baseball. I'm
sure
broadcasting where I live, and this is where my family is, and and our kids, and obviously all that.
Yep. That was the only other question I was going to ask is, you know, I'm not going to have you, like, dox you or, like, give out your address or your phone number or anything else, but do you want to say anything about, like, the personal side, you know, your family, you know, your mom's in Chicago and you live here, and anything else, like, you want to just share that people should know about Scott?
Well, I grew up in the suburbs of Chicago, Naperville.
Which high school again? North?
Naperville North, home of David Alano.
Got it. Okay.
And Paul Lazan.
Okay. All right. All right.
It's funny because Aiden Loffrey is going to be on WDWS's Monday night show at the Esquire, and like everybody from a lot of folks from Gibson City are going to be there for the
sure.
show.
Yep.
And I'm sure if you go around GCMS, like, everybody knows who Aiden Loffrey is. If you went back to Naperville North and just said, who's Scott Beatty? Like, nobody would know. Not that I'm even at that status. I'm just saying, I graduated with 700 people.
Yes.
In my class. It's just different.
My high school had 776 people. So, yes.
Yeah, but no, anyway, grew up in Naperville, and my mom and my wife, we met in high school in Naperville. We started dating in high school, so we're one of those.
Dated for how many years before getting married?
Six. But that's because it started in high school and we didn't get married till after school.
Got it.
Lived back in the suburbs where we were both teachers, moved back here. I got into ministry, and we've been here for 20 years living as community folk in Champaign-Urbana. But we've always been one way or another. And I should say this is, as I look at all the common threads in my life, love talking into a microphone. But the other thing is, I've always been around students. One way or another, whether I was teaching, ministry, covering college athletics. That's one reason, like, I think it's cool that Maisie and Ella are here.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
It just, I've always been around students, and I just noticed that that gives me a lot of life also.
Great. Great. All right. Last question. Your years here, where did you live? Like, go dorm and then where you were and then apartment and where it was and all that kind of stuff.
I'm one of those crazy guys that lived all 4 years in Allen Hall.
Wow.
4 years crazy. Of dorm life. 4 years of dorm life.
Interesting.
Part of it was ministry driven.
Sure.
And with what I was involved with. But yep. Also, I don't like to cook. I don't like to cook for myself. I don't like to prepare. And so it was an yep. easy button. I could just go to a cafeteria.
Fascinating. All 4 years.
Yep. My answers would be completely different from that. By my senior year, when you're ready to, like, you're starting to think about your next stuff and you're, you know, and the freshmen are next door just being knuckleheads.
Yep.
You know, then it's like, okay, maybe I've started to outgrow this dorm life.
Yes.
But it was great.
Yes.
And yes. Allen Hall, some will remember this. So the sign out front of Allen Hall, would the second L, somebody would scratch off the horizontal part of the L, so it would just say Alien Hall.
Mm-hmm.
And then they would go and repaint it, mm-hmm. re-stencil or whatever, and then somebody would scratch it off again, so it looked like Alien Hall.
Did people refer to it as Alien Hall?
No, it was just what you did with the sign.
Got it. Okay, anything else you want to share before you try to keep me from talking for an hour?
I don't know. Should we remind folks that we are presented by the U of I Community Credit Union?
We should.
Thanks to their partnership. And we're here in the Armory at the Center for Innovation in Teaching and Learning. Bob Dignan, Kevin Southworth, Sean Mills have been so great in helping us out. And of course, we have producer Maisie here and Ella. Also, they are tag teaming the production. So this has been great.
It's been fantastic.
Somebody said to me this week that you are uncategorizable.
Probably true.
When I thought about future careers when I was young, mm-hmm. broadcasting was certainly one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever say, one day I'm going to grow up and be a uber fan of a college team and then share all my feelings about it on a website and in social media,
mm-hmm.
and that's what I will do?
I did not, but my sister reminded me early on when I started the blog that in like eight years old, I told the family I was going to work for Sports Illustrated so I could go to the Super Bowl every year. Because for some reason I realized that you could go to the Super Bowl for free if you worked for Sports Illustrated. So, you know, my dad subscribed to Sports Illustrated and I would read it cover to cover. And, you know, there's all these little moments of like, this was going to eventually be what I'm going to do. But back then, you know, originally, you know, when you're like 5 years old, I was going to be an astronaut, obviously. I went through a 2-year phase where I was going to be a weatherman. Like, I wanted to like do the weather on TV. I don't know why. No idea.
I had a similar phase, but were you thinking meteorology or just I want to present where the cold front is?
Honestly, for Christmas, I got a set of like this little dry erase board with like the days of the week on it and you could write on there. And then it had like these stickers you could put on of like a sunshine or snow and these magnets and all this stuff. So I hung it in all of our bedrooms in my 2-story house where I grew up were upstairs and there was a landing. So you go down 6 stairs, turn at the landing, go down. So right on the wall on the landing there, I started doing the weather for my family. Just let them know, you know, I'm like 9 years old at the time, but I'm letting them know, like, bring a light jacket, Dad. You're going to, you know, there's a cold front moving in this afternoon. And so after getting that Christmas gift, I had this thing of like, I'm going to be a meteorologist. And then that didn't last.
So you didn't get like, it wasn't like my first anemometer?
No, but I did have like a thermometer. I had a barometer. I would put the barometric pressure on the chart for mom to check out before head to the grocery store. But yes, that was my little phase. So then I took the, this is how lame I am. I took the pre-SAT, which is like sophomore year high school. It's like the practice test. before you're actually going to take the ACT or the SATs in as a junior. As part of that, they did a career survey, rank 1 to 5, how much you would enjoy A, B, C, all these different questions. When I got my score back, the thing said, no joke, landscape architecture was like what the career, and I was just a pretty standard person. I wanted to go to Illinois because of the sports. I went to the guidance counselor, said, does Illinois have landscape architecture? Yes. All right. Oh, that's what I'm doing. And that was, I put no other thought to it in any other direction than that until obviously 5 years ago when I left my landscape architecture career. So that was the whole thing, is I took the pre-ACT or pre-SAT. I took the career survey. It said, you should be a landscape architect. I'm like, I don't know what that is, but okay, I'll do that. And so I applied for landscape architecture here, got in, and that's my degree.
And of course, you were in love with Illinois sports.
Yes. I picked Illinois because of the 89 Final Four. Like, that was spring of my sophomore year of high school. I'm like, I'm going to be an Orange Crush. This is all I need for life. Like, this is it.
Along the way, you start a blog.
Yes. Yes. That was years down the road, probably.
Sure.
So probably the best way to go through this is just walk through. I did 5 years here. So I got here in the fall of 91, graduated in spring of 96. 4-year program I did in 5 years, barely. Then I got a job in St. Louis at a landscape architecture firm. That one lasted 8 months before I was laid off. The night I was laid off, there was a Christmas party for ASLA, which is the American Society of Landscape Architects. At that Christmas party, I met somebody else who owned a...
Is that when terrorists took over the party? And
it was not. It was not at Nakatomi Plaza.
Oh, okay.
It was not.
Sorry, that's a different
story.
Different. Somebody else I'm thinking of.
Yes. Yeah, you've got me confused.
My friend, John
and
McLean.
And so at that Christmas party, I met another guy who was looking for a landscape architect. I started working there, and I worked at that company for 24 and a half years before doing this. So I just settled into landscape architecture career in St. Louis. I lived in the city of St. Louis. I bought a house and lived in the city. And that was my next phase. Like, I was just, that's what I was going to do. I got married. You know, let's pull up this is probably the best way to tell my story. Let's go to my photo here. That's you and Christina. Let's go full screen on this. So I got married in 2005. This is my wife in the photo here. She had 3 boys at the time. So I went from 30-year-old bachelor to 31-year-old.
You're second from the right.
Yes, yes.
Just make sure it's not your wedding.
Yes. And so my parenting phase was very short because the boys were 12, 10, and 8 at the time. So Tim, my son all the way on the right there, he, you know, graduated high school 6 years after I was his parent, kind of thing. Like, I barely had any time to parent some of these guys, but their dad wasn't involved in their life, so I was able to adopt them. So that was a big part of it for me, that you know, we just kind of, she had been raising the boys for 10-ish years by herself, and I just stepped in and adopted them, and their names changed, and we moved forward like that. So this photo here, I don't know if it's up on the screen, but if you put it back up, Maisie. This photo is from my son's wedding. That's my middle son in the center and his wife. And then we also, along the way, quasi-adopted a fourth son. So all the way on the left of the photo is Aaron. He was our oldest son's best friend in high school. Kind of had some rough things at home, and he ended up living with us for a while and was always around and just part of the family. And so without adopting him, we adopted him, and he comes to Christmas at our house, and his kids are our grandkids, and we tell people we have 4 sons. So these are our 4 boys, Aaron, Nick, Matt, and Tim, across there, and then that's my wife. And then in the red in the photo is Aaron's wife, and in the wedding dress is Matt's wife. So all of these people in 11 days arrive in Champaign for the first Christmas where we've been able to get everybody together. And so my life moved very quickly from bachelor to, you know, parent who had 6 kids. a track meet on Saturday, but also had to get to the flag football game, but also had to also get to the wrestling meet and all that kind of stuff. I just dove right into that phase. So it's out of that phase that I came to start the blog. As the year Tim went off to college and the year I guess Matt turned 16, got a job. We never saw him, you know, get a car, get a job, junior in high school, and you just never see your kid as much as you did the year before. And then Nick was 14 at the time, and Nick, you know, when you're 14, you shut the door and stay inside your room as much as possible. And I needed, my wife started a different job at the hospital where she worked. And she started going in at like 4:30 in the morning, which means she was going to bed at like 8:30 p.m. And my evenings were wide open. Like suddenly from all of this stuff going on and going to track meets and going to this and wrestling meet and that and to take him to band practice and all that, it was suddenly 8:30, crickets in the house, and I had nothing to do. So I'm like,
it's Robert time.
Yes. And so it was, well, I always kind of liked sports stuff. What if, you know, there's these blogs now, what if I started a blog? And that was the origin of the whole thing. I didn't have a like, I'm gonna change my career, I'm gonna go do something else now. It was simply, oh, my wife just went to bed, it's 8:30, I'm gonna be up till midnight, am I gonna do?
But if I had come to you at that point and said, would you like to come cover sports and go on a path that maybe one day could get you to that Super Bowl and you could be writing about sports,
mm-hmm.
but not necessarily Illinois. At that time, would you have gone, yeah, this is interesting to me? Or at this point, we're like, I just, Illinois.
So I had a little taste of it because my job in college, junior and senior year, was I worked at the News Gazette as a score taker, which, so this is like 94, 90, 95. And at the time, high school coaches could not enter the score of the game online or anything. It was simply on a Friday night, I would go to the News Gazette. I would answer the phone. It's the coach from Cerro Gordo calling in. He gives me the whole box score, you know, in the second quarter, so-and-so, 7-yard touchdown run, all that kind of stuff. I would write it down, build the box score that would go in the News Gazette the next day, hang up the phone, and then the, you know, Georgetown Ridge Farm coach would call, sure. And I would take down that score. And then same thing for basketball. Somebody would call in, maybe it's the student manager, maybe it's the head coach and this and that, and they would call in and say, Jackson had 17 points, Anderson had 12 points and 3 rebounds, and you just fill out the forms and do that. So I did that at the News Gazette for a while, and then I switched to, this is some old-time newspaper terms, I moved to a job called Agate Shooter, which was, at the time, the Agate page is the scoreboard page in the sports section.
The little font.
Yes, all the little stuff, the NBA standings, the local bowling scores, the results of the 5K on Sunday, all of those things that go into that one page. Again, this is pre-internet, so it was, well, this was burgeoning internet. So you could, at the time, in 95, get on this wire service with the AP, and you could pull the NBA standings down, and they were updated all the time. And so you'd go grab the NBA standings after the final. You remember the News Gazette at the time was like a midday paper, and so there was no like deadline at 10:30 p.m. So it was the perfect college job, because if there was a Sacramento Kings game, whoever was Agate Shooter that night had to wait until that Kings game was over. It goes to overtime. It's getting over at 12:45 p.m. local. And then you have to get that score set up sometime overnight.
Just so, checking, where would your wife be on this story at this point? Would she be elbowing you?
No, this is 96. This
no, is I know college. She's not in your life yet. Oh. I meant like if you're telling this story, if she was here presently, would she be elbowing you?
No, she does this thing where when I'm going too long on a story, she'll like, there was one time, I'm about to tell a story.
No, I don't need that story. No,
it's coming.
Nope. See?
It's going to happen. It's unstoppable because it's funny.
All right. If, for those of you who are listening and working out, you just have to do another
It's the best way to describe me as a person is this story.
Okay.
We are at her stepsister's house. This is not long after we got engaged. They hadn't heard the engagement story. Okay. In a lot of couples, maybe it's the wife who has the details of that story, you know, maybe there's just a, oh, I don't really remember this right. and that. I'm a guy who's going to give you a 45-minute engagement story, okay? She got to the point, they had made a cake for us as like a celebration of us getting engaged. She didn't want to interrupt me. She didn't wasn't at the elbow point yet. We had just gotten engaged. So she took the piece of cake and was just kind of like mashing it inside the fork. She made this pile of cake on the middle of the plate of like, I'm not going to say anything. I'm just going to let him go on. And so that's our little keyword of like, oh, wait, you're mashing the cake, aren't you? Yes, I'm probably doing it once again. So that's how I am with every, it's how I write. When I write a 4,000 word article, it comes from this space. It's just who I am, how I've always been, and how I always be. And you just have to be my governor. Like on a go-kart governor.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Okay. Yes. So I'm going to not. Yeah. Governor. let me move it. You moved. You're in the full-time space now.
Yes.
Of sports media.
Yep.
But you don't quite fit a category. And 100%. Some people are asking, so what's this? Mm-hmm. What is this? Mm-hmm. Is this anything?
Yes.
This podcast, which we appreciate the opportunity. I guess people in the past had asked you to do it.
Yeah, let me. I can frame it this way. So I moved here in 2020 after having the blog as a hobby. You know, I got a press pass in 2013 football season, and then now I'm traveling up from St. Louis and driving up, and I've got a lot of expenses. So I started doing like a base, like, hey, pay me $12 a year just to cover my expenses, because this is getting really expensive to do.
Yeah, for a subscriber.
Yes. Then I doubled that to $24 a year. Anybody could read 10 articles, but if the 11th article each month, they would hit the paywall and then they had to read. So it was just the diehards who were paying, and I just needed to cover my expenses because now I'm covering every home game and that type of thing. So as that grew and grew and grew, it got to this point where it was like, I think I could do this. I really do think I could do this full time. Like, I think I could launch a real subscription website and do this full time. But to do it, I'd have to be in Champaign. My wife gets a call from her former manager in January of 2020 saying, hey, is there any way you would consider a job in Champaign, Illinois? Just out of nowhere. She knew nothing about the blog, anything else. My wife called me at work, gave me the, are you sitting down? And just said, she said the job's mine if I want it. She's been looking for somebody, and we could, you know, if you want to do this, we could do this. And we would move to Champaign, and you would leave your 25-year landscape architecture career. So we did that, moved on. We moved here. Perfect time to move here. On April 4th of 2020, we moved the week of, like, severe quarantine lockdown in Champaign where absolutely nothing was open. It was a very weird time to relocate from Missouri to Illinois, but that's when we did it. And so I've been doing this full-time 5.5 years now, coming up on 6 years. And throughout that time, I had done some podcasting, and then I backed away from it and just did my little from the stands thing that I record after games and from the highway things I do. So it's just the from the podcast feed now. And always had in mind that once everything was fully established with the website and the flow of subscriptions and writing and articles and other people writing articles and covering games and everything else, I would want to get into this space, which started yours and my conversation about doing this. And so from our first conversations, I think the biggest thing was you are a host, a natural host. That thread goes throughout your whole life. I'm a natural talker, as we've covered. I'm a natural, could talk on any topic about anything, especially Illini athletics, which I'm so passionate about. And so that's what kind of was the seed that led to this. I don't know if you want to say anything about it or talk about how, you know, what put this forward in your brain, but that was my path.
It was an interesting concept when you brought it to me, and I felt like the timing was right. We could go probably have a whole nother episode on sports media.
Sure.
How it's consumed and all that.
Mm-hmm.
I love the medium of radio, especially, but I've been in stream, I would call it streaming TV.
Mm-hmm.
It's not an over-the-air signal, but, you know, I've had those opportunities. But I like variety.
Yep.
And I hadn't ventured into a dedicated podcast space.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, we've become friends.
Yes.
I think that's one element to this, is that we've just become friends.
Yep.
And I recognize that you're not in a category.
Mm-hmm.
When people say, you know, you're not the neutral, objective, mm-mm, X's and O's, break it down, analyze. You're coming from the fan space.
Yep.
That's just totally different for me.
Sure.
You know, I went to Illinois. I would like Illinois to win.
Mm-hmm.
But most of the space I operate in needs to just be purely objective.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fine. I just think that you're you and I'm me, and here we are.
Yes. And I also think it's important to talk about a common thread here for you and I. Knowledge of who Gene Percorni is, like, you know.
All right,
that's the principal tubist of the Chicago Symphony, formerly principal tubist of the St. Louis Symphony, stolen by Chicago. You as kids were mad when the Bulls would trade somebody. Me as a child, when Chicago stole Gene Percorni from the St. Louis Symphony, it was a big deal. But you and I have a musical background, musical families thread that is common for both of us.
We may have broken ground. First time a principal tubist of a symphony orchestra has been mentioned on a sports podcast. And 99.5% of people listening to this have no idea who we're talking about. But I do applaud the fact that you've hung with us to this point.
Yes. And I would like to note, Gene Percorni was my dad's hero. Like, my dad didn't, it was not Ozzie Smith, it was Gene Percorni. I reached out to him. My dad passed away in 1993. So this is years later. This is 2021. I reached out to him just to say, like, I feel like you need to know that you were my dad's hero. Like, he looked up to you like some people looked up to Mickey Mantle. And
some of my heroes in my youth were the Chicago Symphony Brass Section.
Yes.
And now I think talking about this is really hitting the demographic right square where we're trying to be with this podcast.
Yes, 100%. Do you want to throw out some names of, like, you know, who is second trumpet?
Will Scarlett, but we do not need to.
I do.
We do not need to go. Yes. We don't want to give away all the content,
mm-hmm,
on just episode number.
Listen,
three.
Will Scarlett
give
is no.
Give people a reason to come back.
Listen, Susan Slaughter of the St. Louis Symphony. I will take her as a principal trumpet over anyone. Susan Slaughter is the goat. The goat of principal trumpets. Shout out Susan Slaughter, wherever you are. She's still alive. I hope so.
Thank you, everybody, for indulging us a little bit. Again, we have some plans. Mm-hmm. So we hope that you will enjoy what's coming next on our next episode. But we just wanted to tell you a little bit about ourselves, who we are. And we will get back to sports.
Mm-hmm. Maybe.
Or
probably.
Classical brass players.
That's
whatever
right.
Will come our way in episode number. Maybe people who have played brass instruments. Maybe we'll just try to find somebody who's done that.
Listen, I've been to at least 5 Canadian brass performances. At least 5 in my life. Can you beat that, or is it more or less?
It's less.
Okay.
I think 2 or 3.
Okay. Yes. My dad, Canadian brass was everything.
A former Canadian brass member is a faculty at the University of Illinois School of Music.
See how
Bernard
you just
Scully
brought it
on French horn.
All the way back. All the way back. Look, Scott, this is who we are, right?
So we are.
We told people we were going to present who we are, and this is exactly who we are.
Thank you to Maisie Garrett for her production today. Thanks to our hosts at the Center for Center for Innovation in Teaching and Learning, Siddle at the Armory at the University of Illinois. Until next time, we'll talk to you again on Light the Eye.
So this long as the goat.